The field of the sun itself lies at infinity. For example, the field of influence of our sun goes so far as to hit the area of the nearest sun. The same applies to the individual planets. When man on any planet begins to study the cosmos, he first notices that the force field of his planet is limited to a small area. The second discovery is that he realizes that it goes much further than meets his neighbor. Depending on the size of this force field can repel or attract. How is that? Well, take this ship for comparison. Not too close and we are pulled towards the Earth. The closer we get to her, the balance tips in favor of repulsion. When this repulsion begins, we have to change our whole ship propulsion system. A neutral space is the field in which the forces of two planets meet. The reactions that are felt passing through such a space are due to the fact that the force fields of the two planets are not equal. This gives the weaker the push of the stronger and vice versa. If you compare the Earth and Eckhart, who of them has the larger force field? The Earth in this case, so the neutral space is closer to Eckhart. And as the distance between the two grows larger, then their force fields get larger, but always in the same proportions, so if their mutual distance is greatest, nothing else happens, except when it is the smallest. Does this also apply to the distance between the sun and its planets? No. Because the force field of the sun is infinitely greater, the planets are held by it. It is the same as the relationship planet-moon. A part of a planet is repelled by its RTMS sun to a greater distance, other parts are attracted by it. Why do not space-roaming fragments cause damage to your spaceships? First, because they consist of a matter subject to destruction by friction, and second, because the ships have a protective layer around their outer surface. Will I have to go back to sleep now, or can I spend the rest of the trip fully awake? You have to sleep again when we reach the strongest barriers around the Earth. Is it still long time until then? Yes, quite a long time. You can stay awake for 1 Eckhart hour or 7 Earth hours and 40 minutes. Can you see the Earth well now? Yes, reasonably. I would like to look at it from the room, is that possible? Yes, I will show you. You always say I'll wake you or you need to sleep now. But I cannot remember that you've ever woken me or given me a sleeping pill. I just took this food pill. Can you explain that to me? Do not you remember the round, glowing spot above your bed? Yes, of course. But I did not find anything unnatural about it. What does is the significance of the light? This light is the same thing that dazzles people on Earth as they approach a spaceship, a very powerful ray that instantly makes people unconscious. The light above your bed obviously much weaker, it only causes an immediate, almost normal, state of sleep. You turn the light off when I've gone to sleep. No, only when we want to wake you. What is the effect of this simple light on the human organism? This is by no means just a simple light. Our scientists worked for years until they discovered the brain mechanism that the light affects to control sleep, start or stop it. Are you saying that a person in the light of the beam does not wake up until it is turned off? Exactly. What I would like to know is the following: what did the son of the sun say to you at the sports festival? He told me how to proceed with you during the trip. He opened the faucet and gave me another pill with a sip of water, which I swallowed without hesitation. 27. Look into space. We got up and walked unhurriedly through different sections of the ship until we reached the area with the telescopes. You can now look at the Earth as you wish. Does you get a good view from here? Yes, a reasonably good view, I've already told you. How far are we from her at this moment? About 10 million kilometers. Still so far. Could not I see her from 500 kilometers away? No, because you will have to sleep again soon, until we reach the Earth. Are you sure that I cannot bear the last stretch of the journey in an awake state? Yes, because when we are 4,000 to 5,000 kilometers from Earth, we have to make 2 or 3 orbits before we can land. When we enter this cycle, the ship makes movements similar to those of a stone thrown flat over the surface of the water, a skipping motion. These movements are also pretty much increasing how much worse that would be for you. Yes, That's a pity. We sat down together on a bench and he let me look through one of the telescopes. When I saw both the Earth and Eckhart from here, I was reasonably surprised, firstly, because I thought I could see the Earth from here much larger, and second, because I had imagined that I could see everything clearly. But both these ideas were wrong. Eckhart, at my side, looked through another telescope and gave me explanations. I saw something like this. In the infinite darkness of space, I saw thousands or millions of small stars. I myself know less about the space and its stars and planets than many other people. Below, one could see, of course, much larger, our sun, the Earth and its moon. From our observation point they seemed to form two straight, V-shaped lines below. The sun lay right in front of me, the Earth just to the right and the moon quite close to the Earth. Even more to the right, how and in what colors did these three heavenly bodies appear to me? The sun was the same size as it is seen at midday from Earth, but here it did not emit that glow that prevents us on Earth from seeing it for a long time with the naked eye. The Earth was a spectacle for itself. It was about a meter in diameter, but only a small part of it was lit, about where it faced the moon. The bright part looked almost exactly as I had seen it from Eckhart. I noticed that it was now night in South America, for in the bright part one saw a stretch of ocean with mainland and islands that I could not identify. I did not dare to ask Eckhart about it. Unfortunately, my inability to distinguish colors well prevents me from describing the beauty of the Earth in more detail. I could see vaguely about five colors, certainly blue, in the bright section. The dark part appeared to me in a mixture of black and blue. Thirdly, I saw a belt around the Earth, both around the light and around its dark part. This belt also seemed to be blue. Fourth, I saw a second, larger belt. This lay around the first belt like a rainbow, sending out a brightness like a very weak electric light bulb. Fifth, at both ends of the bright part, I saw two dark lines. From my point of view, they lay at the top and bottom of the Earth and crossed the bright part in a horizontal direction. The result is the same impression one has when looking from a high point of view at a light projected from the ground over a ditch lying in the dark. The greater part of the moon was lit up at this moment, but even this bright part did not shine. It looked about the same as I had seen it from Eckhart. 28. Landing on our Earth. We went back to my dormitory again. Eckhart said, "This will be your last sleep on this journey. When you wake up, we will be already on Earth. Are you directly flying to the point where we started?" "No, we'll land at another point on Earth first." "Where is this point?" "Maybe I'll show you the place when we get there."
"What time of day or night will we be there?"
"About 3 hours before dawn." "Do you know if I'll be dropped off near the city I live in or further away?"
"I understand it's about 5 kilometers away."
"Why not close by?"
"Because you will need this little walk. Maybe, despite the nightly hour, I can find a car to take me to the city. Among the other instructions that I have already given you, I would like to tell you the following. Before you go home, you must go nowhere else nor talk to anyone, especially not about what you have experienced. But it could be that I do not feel well after landing. That will not happen. You can easily complete this walk, as you will have breathed terrestrial oxygen for several hours before landing. That's why we're landing at another point on Earth first."
"Will some of the crew get out with me?"
"No, none of us. You will only be escorted to the drop-off point." I lay down to sleep again. Knowing now the function of the point of light, I took the greatest effort to see what my reaction was. I lay on my back and looked up but saw no light. I looked at Eckhart questioningly. He touched the seemingly smooth wall at that moment, and the point of light appeared. "Never in my life have I received anesthesia, but only heard about it. My organism now reacted in the same way as other people had told me. I could not keep my eyes open and immediately fell asleep, such a sleep that even if I had dreamed, I would not have remembered anything when I woke up." On awakening, there was a big surprise for me. At first I thought that something special had happened, because in front of my bed was not only Eckhart, but also a man I did not know. But the most amazing thing was the clothes the two wore.
Instead of their usual dress, they now wore a sort of cloak, and on their heads they had a transparent hood, which reached down to the neck, where it was closed by a kind of rubber. The head was completely wrapped, and in front of his mouth was a square box like a loudspeaker. Her hands were covered, too. I sat up and asked, "Why are you dressed so strangely?" Akok answered, "It sounded like he was talking in a tin can. The atmosphere in this room is that of Earth now, but we don't yet EMT want to acclimatize to it, so we wear these protective suits." I looked around and noticed that the bedroom was sealed everywhere. I got up, and at that moment I felt something very strange about myself. The huge inflated feeling I was almost getting used to was no longer felt, and I felt very slim now. My arms and legs seemed to be made of iron, slender, but stiff and heavy. I had a hard time even moving one foot. Akok seemed to know that feeling. He smiled, handed me my earthly clothes and said, "Get dressed." I changed my clothes and checked my pockets. All my belongings were still there. When I put on my shoes, I felt like my legs were two iron bars with feet. When Akok saw that I was moving, he went to the wall, opened a peephole, and asked laughing, "Do you want to see where we are?" With some difficulty, I moved over to him and looked through a telescope, hoping to see the fields and forests of my homeland. But I saw only ice and snow to the far horizon. "Where are we?" "Well, somewhere on Earth." Next he said nothing more, because he certainly did not want to tease me. I could say for sure that it had to be one of the two polar regions, probably around the Antarctic, because they certainly had not flown to the North Pole to drop me off to the South. Akok closed the peephole and told me to sit down again. He himself and the other gentleman were still standing. I noticed that the ship was moving and asked, "Are we already flying to my homeland?" "Yes, we are." "Will it be long before we get there?" "No, in a few moments we will land there." After a short while, I noticed that the sound that could be heard when the ship was moving, had subsided. 29. Back on the mainland. Akok approached me with the remark, "We're going to land now. We will drop you off a few meters from the road that leads to your town." I was so moved that I could not answer. He continued, "We will take you to the exit of the ship. When you step on the ground, go forward 10 steps without turning around." "Why can't EMT I turn around?" "Because it has to be that way." The two of them escorted me myself in the middle down the stairs. Every step I took made me feel stiffer. I thought, "I will never feel okay again." Akok said, "You may not feel very well, but don't you TMT worry, it will soon pass." We finally reached the outer door. Akok put both hands on my shoulders, gave me some instructions, and we said goodbye without fuss as usual. A door opened somewhere in the wall and I slowly walked out of it. Before me lay my beloved Earth, waiting for me to take my first step on it. The night was dark. The moon was not full. One of my feet was already on grassy ground. Obviously they had dropped me off in a meadow with the next step I had left the ship. After 5 steps I felt a great brightness that emanated from the ship, then there was complete darkness again. When I had the ordered 10 steps behind me, I turned around and hoped to see the departure of the ship, but there was nothing to see. I looked up to the sky. I saw nothing. Everything was very quiet. I looked to the horizon, hoping to discover something. Nothing. Finally, I saw the uselessness of my actions. The ship seemed to have dissolved into nothing. I had to get used to the darkness to get on. After a short time, I saw a wire fence a few feet in front of me. My limbs were like lead. I tried to reach the fence. When I was there, I put my hands on the fence and stopped for a few minutes. Now I saw the street a few meters from the fence. I also recognized the area. It had to be about 5 kilometers to my town. Slowly I raised one leg to crawl through the fence. When I arrived on the other side, I could not prevent a fall. I lay on the ground, gasping, my heart racing. I felt like I was dying. Instinctively I wanted to call for help, but remembered Akok's instructions and controlled myself. It would not have helped.
because nobody lived in the area and hardly anyone would come by this hour. Almost crawling, I reached the roadside. I stretched out my legs and lay on my back in the damp grass, but soon felt that this was not good for me. After much thought, I was almost ready to curse them for not putting me closer to the city. I was able to stand on my feet with great effort and caution. With my hands, I had pulled myself up by the side of the road. With difficulty, I stumbled forward a bit. With the help of a walking stick, which I had improvised, things got a little better. After a short while, I had another mishap. I stopped because my whole head was spinning and I had the craziest thoughts. Then I slowly proceeded home. I began to feel a bit better. When I had come halfway to the city, I heard the sound of a car. I saw the headlights about a mile behind me. My first thought was to stop it and ask for me to be taken home. But again, I remembered Acock's instructions that I should not contact anyone before I got home. When the car was very close, I threw myself sideways into the ditch, afraid that I would be discovered. 30. Return to my family. After then, I did not meet anyone else until I arrived in the town. Even though I had a march of about 3 hours behind me, now I felt completely normal again and marched on for another hour. At dawn I reached the street where my house is located. Now I also met the first pedestrians. They came from Igra, which is near my hometown. There are early masses that begin in the winter in the dark and are finished at dawn. Some people greeted me. I returned their greeting very quietly, fearing that I would not be able to speak Portuguese correctly after having had to speak German for so many days. This morning was Friday, May 23, 1958. At last, after 8 days, I reached my house, from which I had set off on an 18 kilometers march, of which I had only been able to cover 8 kilometers. In her cheerful way, my wife received me. "Well, finally back again? Did everything go well?" Instinctively I felt that something strange about me must be apparent as I stood in front of her, and she bore into me with the question, "Arthur, is something troubling you?" I tried to reassure her, but could not completely master my own sense of unease. End.